Welcome to iFormRx, where we explore the evidence that informs ambulatory care pharmacy practice. My name is Stuart Haynes, Editor-in-Chief of iFormRx, and joining me today is Sandeep Devabhakthuni to talk about the use of text messaging to encourage behavior change. A recent study conducted by researchers in Australia and New Zealand was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association in September 2015. Dr. Devabhakthuni wrote a commentary for iFormRx entitled, "Text Me, Text Messaging to Promote Behavior Change." Sandeep is a cardiology clinical pharmacy specialist at the University of Maryland Medical Center and one of my colleagues at the University of Maryland School of Pharmacy here in Baltimore, Maryland. Thanks for joining me today, Sandeep, for the iFormRx podcast.
Thank you, Dr. Haynes, for the opportunity.
So, Sandeep, if you had to briefly summarize in four sentences or less the study entitled Effect of Lifestyle-Focused Messaging on Risk Factor Modification in Patients with Coronary Heart Disease, a Randomized Control Trial, to someone who hasn't read the paper, what would you say?
Chow and colleagues conducted a randomized clinical trial to examine the effect of a text messaging system, which was designed to encourage lifestyle changes in patients with coronary heart disease. The authors randomized patients with coronary heart disease to receive or not receive text messages. These text messages were tailored to provide advice, motivation, and information on diet, physical activity, and smoking cessation. Then at 6 months, they looked at specific outcomes, including the LDL. There were statistically significant differences, but modest clinical reductions in levels of LDL in the intervention group compared with the control group. Also, the text messaging system was well received by the patients, and it was found to be inexpensive, since the average cost for each patient was about $10.
So unlike most randomized control trials that use either a placebo or an active comparator group, the patients in this trial weren't blinded. Only the clinical staff that provided the messages to these patients were blinded to the group's allocations. I'm curious about your thoughts on this potential source of bias, and what would you say are the key strengths and weaknesses of this study?
I think that's a good point that you bring up, and I agree that this is a potential source of bias. However, I can understand the rationale for why the authors did not blind participants in the study. It would be challenging to devise a text messaging system for the control group without confounding the results. The only way they could have blinded the study to the participants would be to provide text messages to both groups. But if the authors tried to create a generic messaging system that was not really tailored to lifestyle changes, the patients in the control group probably would have figured it out that they were in that group. And if these patients can figure it out that they were in the control group, they would have been less motivated to pay attention to the text messages, which would have defeated the purpose. So I actually think it was helpful to have a comparative group where they didn't do text messaging. And we know that these patients only follow the standard of care. So that way we can make a good comparison between the groups. Some of the key strengths that I thought were worth noting was the randomized control design, since a lot of the other studies that have been done in the past have been very small and retrospective in nature. And they also used objective clinical outcomes like LDL. And previous studies often used self-reported measures. So, for example, for smoking cessation, they often relied on patient self-reporting whether or not they stopped smoking, which could introduce reporting bias. So I thought it was good that they used objective measures like that. But there were some limitations to the study. The study was conducted at a single center in Australia with majority including men. And they also had to speak English and have access to a mobile phone, which could limit their generalizability. This was also conducted over a six-month period. So it is really unclear if text messaging system would lose effectiveness over time. As you may know, when people are using technology or writing, people tend to lose interest in it over time. So would we see user fatigue after 6 months? It's hard to say. Another limitation was that the LDL reduction of 5 milligrams per deciliter may not be clinically meaningful. So it's hard to translate whether or not this would translate to a decreased risk of coronary events. Also, the authors did not test validity or reliability of the text message system, which should be something to consider in future studies to ensure best text messaging practices.
So the results of this study suggest that text messaging can positively impact patient behavior. Significantly more patients in the text messaging group achieved their blood pressure and lipid goals, and perhaps most importantly, from in my mind, more patients in the text messaging group stopped smoking, lost weight, and were more physically active. The changes in most of these cases were as good, if not better, than many other well-established interventions that we have available to us, including drug therapy. So, do you think text messaging is something that every practice should consider implementing for their patients? And if so, what do you see are the primary barriers that would hinder clinicians from doing so? And if not, why not?
While the study, the current study, looked at the specific patient population to improve cardiovascular-related outcome, the trial really did have promising findings that a simple and expensive text message system can have a huge impact on a patient's health. And so, based on these findings, I believe that text messaging could be implemented in general practice. Since most people use cell phones nowadays, texting is a great way to communicate with patients and can really empower patients to become more actively involved in their healthcare. I really believe that this could be a useful tool to help patients in a variety of settings. For example, in patients requiring anticoagulation with warfarin, text messaging could be a way to help patients achieve their INR goals in a more efficient manner. I could also see this being helpful for patients with HIV or heart failure who need to be reminded to take their medication, and hopefully this might actually reduce their rate of readmissions. One barrier, though, might be the implementation of the text messaging system. Please keep in mind that the text messaging should not be a standalone intervention, and it should be considered as an adjunct intervention to current standard of care, which would include follow-up visits and medication adherence. From a provider perspective, they might see this as an additional burden for the patient. So I think it's important that we would educate the providers on how text messaging could be simple and inexpensive, and it actually wouldn't require much for the patient to be able to use this. From a patient perspective, the only primary barriers I see are that they need to have access to a cell phone, and then they also have to be able to communicate in the language that's used for text messaging.
So, Sandeep, I want you to imagine you have a 68-year-old woman who's just been admitted to your service with acute coronary syndrome and has two stents placed. She's obese and has a history of high blood pressure, and she currently smokes one pack per day. She readily admits that she wasn't very good about taking her medications, and despite trying to quit smoking, she's found it super hard to stop. Is text messaging a viable intervention in this case? What additional information would you need to know about this patient? And if you thought text messaging might work, how would you go about getting it started?
Well, before I consider even doing a text messaging system for this patient, I would need to assess her willingness to make a change in her life. The only way that text messaging would work, to be honest with you, is for a patient to take responsibility for their health. So I would want to assess her readiness to change first. If she is in the pre-contemplation or contemplation stages, I would suggest the idea to her and provide resources when she is ready to make a change in her lifestyle. In this situation, though, as you described it, since she has tried to quit cigarettes in the past, she might be amenable to trying a new strategy to encourage lifestyle changes. If she really is willing, I would recommend trying to use text messaging since it may motivate her to take action. I would provide education on how the text messaging system would work and start using it before she even leaves the hospital. I think it's important from an inpatient side to go over the process with the patient before they leave because they're overwhelmed when they go home. I would also want to make sure that she is comfortable with the system and answer any questions that she might have before she leaves. So I would also make it clear to her that this intervention should not be used as a substitute for any of her other health care, which should include regular follow-up visits and medication adherence. After she leaves the hospital, I would then want to follow up with her to ensure that she is using the messaging system and provide help if she identifies any barriers. So if she has a phone, though, and is willing to make lifestyle changes, I do think that using a text message system could certainly provide her the motivation that she needs to make positive changes.
Well, thank you, Sandeep, for joining us today to discuss the use of text messaging to support patients who are willing and able to make behavioral change. It's clear from your comments that you believe text messaging has a role in supporting patients, and that perhaps many practices or more practices or all practices should be considering implementing some sort of text messaging system for their patients who have mobile phones. Well, tell us what you think. We welcome your comments. Only iForumRx members can leave comments and participate in our interactive features. You can become a member of iForumRx. It's free. Sign up today. And until next time, this is Stuart Haynes, editor-in-chief of iForumRx, signing off.